On as
This
soon as we have the
conference will now be
audio.
recorded.
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for being here tonight. This is Public Works, Public Safety for Thursday, April 8th. First thing that we'll do is call the meeting to order, and then we will do a roll call. And just as a note, Councillor Ask had mentioned to me earlier that he was not going to be able to make the meeting. So I noticed that that Rick is here, I imagine on his behalf, or can act on his behalf anyway. Thanks for being here, Rick. So we'll take roll call. Councillor Osmus.
Here.
Councillor Nelson.
Here.
Councillor Fagerly.
Here.
And Councillor Plowman is here. And then I'm just going to go. I got a nice full video screen, which is nice. Joining us also is our Public Works Director, Sean Christensen, our Public Works Superintendent, Gary Manzer. I think that I saw our City Administrator, Brian Grommets here. I don't know if he's still here or not, but maybe it's on my screen, maybe it's not. Oh, there he is. Yep, I had to shrink the window. Thank you. Also, our Park and Rec Director, Mr. Baumgarten, is here. Our Planning and Development Department is represented by Ms. Swedberg, I notice. Also joining us would be Casey Byers and Jared Vogie, representing Bolton and Mink. Ms. Del Bosque is here for records keeping, and joining us is also the West Central Tribune. And I think I got everyone. Correct me if I'm missing anyone. Okay, well, with that, let's get rolling. We're going to keep the agenda. We'll keep all the items as they are, but we'll quick do a public safety update so that the chiefs can get on with their business. So let's start with police statistics today. Police Chief Felt, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In looking over the Woolmer Police Department statistics for March of 2021 compared to last year, just a few items of note here. Abandoned vehicles and crashes were both up, and that could probably be attributed to the snowfall that we had during those times. Abandoned vehicles tend to stand out a little bit better after there's been some snowfall, and of course crashes increase at the same time. So good thing.
If I could just interject, if anybody's looking, it's page 52 in our packet.
Thank you. And also in looking at some of the other statistics, it's a good thing in looking at disorderlies, domestics, family service calls, mental and suspicious people. Those are all down compared to last year. And that's probably attributes to last year, the coronavirus stay-at-home orders came out about that time. Businesses shut down, a lot of the unknowns of the time, so there was a spike in a lot of those type of activities, and that's down some categories considerably, some categories just a little bit as the restrictions ease up here. So we hope that'll continue to ease up. And looking at our overall calls for service, we are very close to the point we were at last year. We're at the end of March here was about 4,000 calls for service, we're predicting that, you know, at this rate, it'll be pretty close to the last year for total number of calls. So other than that, available for any questions.
Thank you, Chief Felt. Any questions specifically from the committee? Councillor Fagerly, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you ever get a call last week about a gentleman that was sleeping at the post office parking lot for about a week? I haven't seen him there now since it started raining.
We did. We received numerous calls every day on him. And unfortunately, probably the best way to put it, he was a very difficult person. Officers talked to him several times, offered him various services, rides, even to buy him a bus ticket to get him somewhere else. And he refused. The post office did not want him removed from the property. He said his goal was to get arrested, and nobody wanted to give him the satisfaction of that. So they tried to deal with it the best possible, but we're not sure where he went now. But yeah, we believe the rain probably helped move him somewhere else. So.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? I see none. Okay, Chief Felt, thank you for being here tonight and running through the statistics. If you have no other items, which it doesn't look like you do, I guess that you're free to go on your way and have a good dinner and good evening.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Have a good night. All right, Fire Chief Hansen, with our fire statistics, I hope everybody else got the email like I did today. Thank you for sending that out ahead of time. Much appreciated. Go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, before you is the March 2021 Fire Department statistics. You'll note that in March of this year, we did have 3 dumpster fires compared to last year and most of last year where we didn't have any. The other notable thing really is our machinery accident. We did have a person at FedEx get his hand caught in the conveyor belt. But us, along with the rescue squad, responded and took the machine apart and got his hand out without any major injuries. So that doesn't happen every day for us, thank goodness. You'll note that the training for March, everything is pretty much the same except for our hazmat or hazardous materials class that we're taking, the 4-month-long class. I believe I mentioned it last month on a state grant. And we are in month number 3 coming up here now in April. So the nicer it gets, we'll be outside. Hopefully we'll be in May. We'll move that class to the rail yard for some hands-on training or to Genio for hands-on training there. Year-to-date calls, or I'm sorry, for the month of March in 2021, we responded to 30 calls, which makes it year-to-date right now of 87 calls, which you'll see is about 22 calls ahead of last year at the end of March. Response time in March was 5 minutes, 14 seconds, and year-to-date response time is 5 minutes and 25 seconds. I will stand for any questions.
Questions from the committee for Chief Hansen? I don't see any questions. Just wanted to make a note. I noticed maybe it was yesterday, there must have been a false alarm at something or something going on at Wells Fargo, and I saw the crews roll in, and I'm always amazed when he gives those response time numbers, but when you think of the time it takes from the time the call is received to the guys suiting up to getting in their trucks to actually being on scene, it's quite amazing that we can have a city that has a fire department that can actually be on scene that quickly. So again, impressed. And the team always does a good job, and it seems like there's always somebody right on scene just within a few minutes. So that's something we're grateful for, even in the event of false alarms, because in the event it's a real call, seconds and minutes really do matter. So shout out to the fire department for that one.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, then I would say, Chief Hansen, you are also free to go about your evening. Unless you want to stick around for the rest of it.
No, I'm good. Thank you. Just have a wonderful evening.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks. All right, committee. We'll jump back into the order of what our agenda is. And the first on our actions item list is the Downtown Streetscape Project Professional Services discussion. And looks like this is going to be... probably, I imagine Ms. Swedberg is going to be taking this one. Ms. Swedberg, go ahead when you're ready.
Marvelous. Thank you. Jared, Casey, I don't know which one. Do you want me to share the PowerPoint from my screen or your guys's? We're going to tag team this a little bit.
I can pull that up, Sarah.
Perfect. Kelsey, I don't know if you have to give Jared maybe some sort of share screen ability there. Haha.
Usually you don't have to wait too long for Kelsey. You pretty much think it. And if you think it, she knows.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So we're very excited to talk about the Downtown Streetscape Improvement Plan. You know, honestly, I was thinking about the beginning of this project. And I remember sitting in the office with Bruce Peterson when this project first came to be. So that is to say, some things take a little bit of time to pull together. So we are going to be talking about what we're proposing for professional services to really kick off this project. The money from this project, Jared, if you want to flip to the next screen or the next slide. The money from this project comes from the 2019 Small Cities Development Program grant. For anyone listening or watching that is unaware of this, this was a grant through the state, through DEED. More than half of this grant was for improvements through the HRA at the high-rise apartment buildings. So they're doing some window renovations and various kind of infrastructure updates that are needed at that building. And then because we have this downtown lighting update that engineering and utilities is currently working on pulling together, we were able to leverage the funds that are anticipated to be spent for that project to get additional funds to do some more kind of downtown streetscape improvements at the total of $400,000. So if we're going to do one thing, we might as well capitalize on it. There is in 2012, there was a downtown master plan created that was kind of an amendment to the comprehensive plan that we have. That master plan called for streetscape updates, lighting, sidewalk improvements, some more trees, maybe some different downtown furniture, meaning benches or garbage cans or various things like that. All of those kind of outdoor sidewalk items. But there was never really good detail. It was just that we wanted this project to happen in downtown, and we knew that updates were needed. And so we wanted to utilize this opportunity to really flesh those details out and come up with what that looks like. So we're really utilizing this opportunity again to kind of update, refine, and develop this streetscape enhancement strategy for downtown. And then Wilmer Main Street, kind of over last year and this year, has invested in a downtown assessment. And that's a project that is being worked on with Minnesota Main Street and Rethos to really utilize what we call transformation strategies, which is a kind of a framework that Main Street America utilizes. There's lots of networks and kind of umbrellas here that I'm talking about, but they developed this kind of transformation strategy program that is kind of time-tested, that they've been developing for about 40 years since Main Street America really began, to say these are kind of buckets and areas and things to really improve our downtowns. You know, make them viable, help us reach these goals we have for these hearts of our communities. And so this downtown assessment really allows us to kind of take a snapshot of where we're at, have some low hanging fruit and maybe some longer term things for us to continue to invest in. That project is planned to kind of wrap up here at the end of this month and in May. But what I wanted to call out, we had about 50 people that participated in some kind of small group setting, targeted conversations around downtown. And then we sent out a community-wide survey and received several hundred responses from that, all focused on downtown, right? People's gut reactions of downtown. And of the comments, so there were about a total of 706 comments received total. So there are multiple comments from each people. Of those 706, of about 650 comments, I'm looking at a different one, of about 650 comments, 88 directly mentioned safety. And safety really ended up talking a lot about lighting. So we're excited. That kind of tells us we're in the right direction with that project. of about 230 answers, 71 specifically noted kind of the state of downtown, or kind of this like aesthetic piece of downtown. In this particular case, a lot of them were commenting on why it would be a reason for them not to live downtown. And especially with the Renaissance Zone and different things, right? That's top of mind. We want to create downtown to be a place that people want to be. And so we're excited about this opportunity to kind of move forward with this work, and really talk about, or and take a step towards investment in some of these aesthetic things. Other comments that kind of came up, right? Trash receptacles, recycling. People really liked the outdoor seating options that we had in 2020. They're excited for those to come back. We're talking about how we might make that a little bit more permanent year after year rather than an emergency ordinance state. And just kind of general green space comments and different things too. So we're really feeling like, you know, that community-centered kind of conversation in this assessment of downtown that we've created really is showing that we're in the right direction with this. This particular project and what we had applied for in the grant originally was to really focus on some bump outs at 6 primary intersections. Those are in your packet, along with some of the proposal that Bolton and Mink has put together. So with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Jared, and he's gonna kind of go over, Jared and Casey, kind of what the two-phase plan is that they have to start on this year. The important thing to remember as well, that those 2019 funds have to be spent by September of 2022. So it's really important that we start this work now so that come that time, we don't lose any money from the state.
Sounds good. Thank you, Sarah. Jared, go ahead when you are ready with your portion.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for that, Sarah, and thanks to the council members and staff for this opportunity to present before you this afternoon. Get my next slide here. So ultimately, as Sarah mentioned, we've really, based on meetings with staff, split this project up into two phases. The streetscape master plan, if you will, and refining that, and then the final design or the construction documents and the bidding portion where the funds actually get expended for the project. So ultimately, when we talk about refining the vision for the downtown streetscape enhancements, we're really talking about taking those comments that Sarah was referring to and meeting with businesses and stakeholders throughout the community and really refining their vision along with council's vision for what downtown ultimately should look like, and then developing a plan for how are we going to approach it, how is it going to come together, what are the priority intersections for some of the amenities that are being referred to, and really flesh that out so that the city has the initial plan moving forward as well as the long-term goal and vision clearly defined for the project. So some people may not be familiar with bump outs, but essentially what a bump out is, and you'll see that on the screen here, it provides a shorter walking distance for pedestrians to cross a street. So that's a safety related item. And also, as you can see, it provides a greater or larger surface area for enhancements such as lights that were discussed, potential flowers. Now, these are just examples, and I don't want anybody to think that this is what's going in exactly, but two different examples you can see lend themselves to different character within the downtown area. So this is the type of work that, with the public input, we can further refine these concepts and figure out exactly what the community wants downtown to look like and consist of. Here again, some examples of streetscape amenities. Sarah mentioned the lighting project that's currently being discussed. Certainly there's an opportunity for boulevard trees, opportunities potentially to gather outside of establishments. I believe the official term for that is a parklet, And I know Mr. Manzer enjoyed that term when we were meeting as staff. So there's just a wide variety of options, and the public engagement process associated with this. So it's further refined in your packet and our proposal, but we view that as very important to make sure that moving forward, everybody's input is taken into consideration and ultimately arrive at the desired character for the downtown. So the project schedule, as Sarah mentioned, the grant funds must be spent by September of 2022. And so provided council and the committee continue to move the project forward, we would look at kicking that project off beginning of May. So that phase one, and again, that's that public input, that's the concept development, and really defining what the construction would look like. That we're projecting to be completed by October 1st, and then immediately thereafter, moving toward the topographic survey and then starting the design process in October. That would continue, we've estimated through February, or the beginning of February, and that would provide an opportunity for the public bidding to occur mid-February to early March, with construction then beginning spring, so that it can be completed by that September 22nd grant deadline date. So with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee staff, Casey and I would be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Jared, and thank you, Sarah, for the presentation. Gives us a good kind of 100,000 foot view of what we're trying to accomplish here. So committee, thoughts, ideas, questions, comments, concerns, or anything in between? Okay, I'll kick it off first of all. Jared, in the couple slides that you showed, one in particular when it showed some aerials of the bump outs in those intersections, and doing a little bit of my own research, I noticed that a lot of the intersections are done in concrete versus asphalt. From a design perspective, would you foresee that as being the preferred method of construction? And if so, can you maybe provide just a little bit of context as to how and why concrete would be a superior method of construction regarding these bump outs and ongoing maintenance and whatnot?
Sure, so that's a good question. So the short answer is the examples that we provided definitely are in concrete. The same concept can be applied or utilized with bituminous surfacing as well. And I think ultimately, as we go through the process, the two different materials give you a different feel within the intersection and within the downtown itself. Just the difference in texture between concrete and bituminous lends itself to a different characteristic, right? So I don't think we've specifically, well, I know we have not specifically landed on a material, whether that be concrete or bituminous. And certainly we would involve public works and engineering in those conversations, but either one is definitely a viable option. And we do have examples of these bump outs utilizing both concrete streets and bituminous pavements.
Okay, thanks. Sean, then maybe I'll bounce it off of you just a little bit, because I think we all understand that construction with concrete is more expensive. However, when done correctly, I think we know the benefits versus asphalt. Do you see added benefit to adding more concrete roadway in the city if we're looking from a long-term perspective with our entire streets program? Is it worth spending the extra money on that?
In general, I don't know that I would make that an all-inclusive statement. But certain areas, like we did in front of the fire hall, because of the heavy truck traffic and turning movements, intersections do lend themselves well to concrete because of the turning movements and concrete being a rigid pavement and bituminous being flexible pavement. you know, so turning movements and hot temperatures and things of that nature in intersections lend themselves better to concrete construction. That being said, you mentioned it, the cost goes up with concrete. And so we got to kind of weigh all those options. And I know that's not really a an answer for you, but it definitely something to consider.
Well, and the only reason that I bring it up, and then I'll jump to Ms. Osmus because I don't want to go too long on this, is just I've been studying just a little bit municipalities across the country and trying to address the big thing is how much more expensive street and roadway construction is getting. And there's an interesting trend in some communities. They're trying to be progressive when it comes to this type of construction, but they're actually taking their money and they're dialing back the amount of miles that they can do, but they're trying to do as much in concrete roadways as what they can, because they're finding that the concrete in the roadways is holding up so much better for so much longer. So they're allocating extra dollars and they're making significant, effort spending, I guess, in the end, you know, millions and tens of millions trying to convert their city streets into concrete. So I kind of thought, well, if that's something, if it's a new trend in design or construction design, whatever, I don't know if that's something that's all over the design world or if it's just in certain areas that can afford it or whatnot. But maybe that's something that we're looking at. Maybe it's not. I just thought it was maybe a good discussion point.
Yeah, we do consider concrete on a number of projects. On the two we bid out Monday, we did not have concrete as an alternative, but we have put that as an alternative on a few projects.
Yeah, I imagine it'll come before us more in the future. Okay, thank you for your thoughts regarding that. Councilwoman Osmus, go ahead.
Thank you. The diagram shows diagonal parking. Would we be switching to that, or do we not have the street width? Because I was thinking New London, they have the bump outs, and I think they still have horizontal parking. What's our plan?
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
Unmuting would help. Jared, you can certainly chime in on this too. I think a lot of what the first phase of what we're proposing, this kind of public engagement and designing process, a lot of those kind of answers will come out, right? There'll be some options. I think 4th Street is much wider, right, than some of the other streets downtown. 4th Street might be a good street to look at, maybe one side turning to some diagonal. Maybe it offers a few more spaces downtown, which parking downtown is always, you know, a topic that's going to come up. It just comes with the territory. But, you know, maybe that is an option for some. We've talked about bump outs that might not actually bump out on kind of both sides of the street, if that makes sense. So each bump out kind of might be half of a bump out. There's lots of different ways that the street design could be, which is partially why we want to go through this designing process and not just have, you know, Sean and myself or whoever it might be kind of pointing and saying, oh, we like that one, right? But having a little bit more of an inclusive kind of engaging process to really get to, not everybody's ever going to be fully satisfied, right? But to kind of come to a consensus of what options we like and what those options kind of provide for us.
All right, thank you. Other questions or comments? Go ahead, Rick.
So if you do have bump outs, is that going to make it more difficult to plow snow in the winter?
Any one of us can take
this one, Andrew. I'm going to let you guys fight over it.
We talked about this a little bit, and I mean, it'd be lying to you if you didn't say it would make it a little more difficult, but I think it's very doable. And I think the benefit, what it does to the city versus the dozen times we have to plow snow, I think outweighs the difficulty of plowing snow. Well, we can make it work. It's not the end of the world. I'm not in a perfect world, you have nothing to go around, but I think it benefits far more than what the hazard of
plowing snow with it. So we'd make it work.
So in typical fashion, our public works crew is saying they're going to figure out a way, which I love. Councilwoman Nelson, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it looks great. And I would offer a motion to authorize to enter into a professional services agreement with Walton and Mink for the downtown streetscape planning and construction design.
Looking for a second.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Recommending the council adopt a resolution authorizing the mayor and administrator to enter into a professional services agreement with Bolton and Mink for the downtown streetscape planning and construction design. Further questions or comments before we vote? Councilwoman Nelson.
Yeah, I appreciated hearing the time frame. I know we've run up against that in a couple of the projects that we've had. And so I hope that we will be wise and make that so we aren't running into deadlines with that. And then also that it would allow us, if there are future things to be thinking about or future budgets kind of thing. So.
Thank you, Councilwoman Nelson. I would concur with that. I do really like the idea of bidding this in February. That timeline, I believe, is advantageous to construction bidding, especially in the state of Minnesota. So I think the city could potentially reap some benefits there. Other thoughts, comments or questions before we vote? All right, we have a motion and a second on the table. We shall vote. Councilwoman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilman Fagerly.
Aye.
Councilwoman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilman Plowman votes aye. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes, and this will be moving on to the city council. Thank you, Sarah, for being here and presenting this to us tonight. We look forward to seeing more in the future. To Jared and Casey, thank you for also being here, and we look forward to seeing additional items as this progresses along.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You guys have a good night. Okay, moving along. I see our next agenda item is a public works grant opportunity. And I don't know if Mr. Manzer is going to chime in on this one, but I'll give it to Sean and he can kick it over to Gary if need be. Go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm doing this one, and I think Gary's online and Sarah Seatsma is online if they want to chime in if I miss some things. But for the most part, I think it's mostly spelled out in front of you. In front of you is two different motions that'll recommend resolutions being adopted by the council for two different grants. The first one is a Minnesota DNR shade tree grant, and that one is a 100% grant, meaning there is no match funding. It's for $25,000, and rather than bore you with the entire reading information there, the items that it can be used for is, you know, planting trees, removal of trees, replacement of trees. So it DNR has a good amount of money that they are trying to put together for this. Historically, I'll touch a little bit on that first paragraph of page 20 indicates, you know, historically we've put up to 400 trees or 300 trees rather. And what this shade tree grant would do would be allow Public Works to plant 400 trees over the next 4 years. And historically we planted 300, as I mentioned, but in the last few years, because of budget cuts, et cetera, we've been in the 150 to 180 range annually. So this 400 will be a great, you know, we'll double our efforts on the tree planting end of things. Mr. Chair, do you want to do one at a time? Do you want me to explain both? How do you want to handle this?
Let's do one at a time, because this first grant is a no match, so it's just a clean amount of money. We just need to make authorization that the powers that be go ahead and pursue that. So I believe we're looking for a motion recommending the council adopt a resolution requesting permission to apply and accept, if awarded, the Minnesota DNR Shade Tree Program bonding grant. Does somebody want to make that motion?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for what I just read. Further discussion? I don't see any hands, so we will go ahead and vote. Councillor Fagerly.
Aye.
Councilwoman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilwoman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilman Plowman votes aye. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes. And now to the MPCA grant. Mr. Christensen.
This one, Mr. Chair, is presented or provided by the MPCA. It's, again, permission to apply and accept, if awarded, what they're calling an alternative landscaping equipment grant. And in a nutshell, again, on page 20 of 66 of your packet, we're asking for a grant of $900 and city funds of $900 would have to be budgeted for a total of $1,800. And what this would do is replace two gas-powered apparatus, you know, string trimmers and et cetera, with battery powered string trimmers. So that is in a nutshell what the MPCA grant is doing, is trying to more environmentally friendly equipment, as well as safety of the people that are carrying around the weight of the two cycle engines on their back or whatever, if they're doing a backpack type thing. So this one, Mr. Chair, is a 50-50 grant, but it's to the tune of $900 each.
Not a huge ticket item, but seems like something that anytime you can maximize your dollar, especially doubling up on dollars, is a smart idea. So in front of us, we have a motion. We'd be looking for a motion recommending the city council adopt a resolution requesting permission to apply and accept if awarded, the MPCA Alternative Landscaping Equipment Grant.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second of the motion as read. Further questions or comments before we vote? We shall vote. Councilwoman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilor Fagerly.
Aye.
Councilwoman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilman Plowman votes aye. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes. Thank you. Next item that I have on our agenda is wastewater lift station pickup purchase. Mr. Christensen, are you taking this one directly, or is Ms. Sietsema going to do this?
Nope, I'm doing this one as well.
Okay.
Unless she wants to. She may have given up on us already. No, I'm doing this one. So this one, Mr. Chair, is per the vehicle replacement committee and policy, was recommending to council to approve the purchase of a 2021 Silverado 5500 pickup and utility box from two different contract pricing venues. What I mean by that is the truck chassis is off state bid pricing, and the utility box and crane is off of all of state bid pricing through a different contract number. The truck chassis itself is $50,000 and change, where they're given a $16,500 trade-in value, and the box and crane setup is just shy of $60,000 for a total purchase price of $93,037.64 after trade-in. Oh, and I will mention, I was really geeked out on this one. Brian made me pull it all out. I was explaining torque, and I was explaining moment, and I was explaining all kinds of stuff. Andrew, you'd have been proud, but it's all, I made it a little easier for everybody.
No, I still appreciate that. Quick question. I see that it's in one motion. Brian, we are okay with doing this in one motion because it's part of the vehicle replacement program? for the equipment and the vehicle itself? You are on mute.
Yes, that's fine. That's not a problem.
Okay. Well, then we are looking for a motion recommending the City Council adopt a resolution approving the purchase of a 2021 Silverado 5500 HD from North Country GM in the amount of $33,553.64 after trade-in, and a utility box from Bird's Truck Equipment in the amount of $59,484. Grand total purchase price of $93,037.64. How does the committee wish to act?
Well, I will make the motion, but Mr. Christensen had his hand up, so I don't know if he has something before we do it.
Oh, we have a motion. We'll see if there's a second.
I'll second it.
All right. We met the threshold. Mr. Christensen, go ahead.
Yeah, and just to be clear, if it's not, this is one unit, right? So when the box comes in, it's attached to, and it will be one vehicle. It's not two separate units.
Duly noted. Thank you. And looks like, yeah, at that $93,000 amount, we are still within our $17,000 under the amount that we have in the capital outlay program. So that budget's looking friendly. Questions, concerns, or comments before we vote? Okay, we have a motion and a second adopting the resolution approving the purchase of the 21 Silverado 5500, as well as the utility box. Oh, I'm sorry, that's from North Country GM, and a utility box from Birch Truck Equipment for a total purchase price $93,037.64. We shall vote. Councilwoman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilwoman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilor Fagerly.
Aye.
And Councilor Plowman votes aye. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes. And now we are on to project number 2108, and this involves seal coating. Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In front of you is our annual seal coating bid. This year, we did even a little bit different than last year, as we effectively have a budget that we want to meet, and then we bid out on a per foot. Actually, they did a per square yard basis, a per unit, let's say, basis from two different contractors to get as many streets as possible for our budgeted amount. This year, I've got a list of streets there that we're going to seal coat. Camco Inc. actually is the low bid at $1.19 per square yard for a total cost of $70,000. The additional bidder was Jet Black with a unit price of $2.43 per square yard, again, for that total of $70,000. So the motion would be, and recommendation of staff would be, to enter into an agreement with Camco for project 2108 seal coating in the amount of $70,000.
Councilor Osmus, go ahead.
Just curious, have we worked with them before? Have they won a bid with us previously?
Yes, but I can't tell you exactly how long ago that was. I could find that out if you would like that in the car for the council meeting. But yes, we have worked with them before, and I know they've bid other projects before as well.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was apples to apples. That just didn't sound familiar to me.
Yeah, they've been on our list before. I can find out some more of that information.
Don't bother.
Sean, question regarding, this is just a little bit higher level question, but when we do these bids, and this is something good for us, I think the full council to know, and I think maybe even just take a little bit of time to discuss at some point during a council meeting. When it comes to awarding bids for street work and stuff like that, if we ever have problems, like significant problems with a particular bidder or contractor, is there any procedure, process, or protocol that keeps that on our radar. Like if we have a lot of trouble with a particular contractor, is there any way for councils or future councils or whatever to know that before we go ahead and award bids? Because when you have people changing, I mean, people on the council change, you have a change in your staffing and whatnot. I can understand Councilor Osmus's question, because sometimes you never know. And if enough time goes by, if you had a really bad experience, you may end up getting into a contractual obligation again with a company that you had a bad experience with in the past and not even know it. So do we have anything like that in place? Is it worth exploring?
You know, in general, and Brian can chime in here too, but in general, we do have something, and it's listed as lowest responsible bidder. Now, it is still a little difficult at times to not award to the low bidder as a public entity, but we've put safeguards in the contract that says, you know, they have to meet certain specs. Sometimes they have to have completed X number of dollars or miles of this type of work before they can even bid. But there is a lowest responsible bidder clause in the contract that I've not seen exercised very often, but is there. Brian, do you have more to add to than that?
Yeah, I think when you get into the nitty-gritty, there have been times when we said, well, maybe not in Wilmer, but in my experience, we said, well, that contractor had many lawsuits at another city for their work, so we're not going to consider them. That's not legitimate. That's not a legitimate excuse to not take them as a responsible bidder. There are situations that any contractor gets into, there might be a disagreement as to what happened and who should pay, et cetera, et cetera. So the lawsuit by itself isn't an issue. But if you could show that they, you know, really did you wrong previously, you know, then you could say, well, six times we've used them and they're not responsible. But I can tell you from past experience that is just something that is just really hard to prove, because they'll throw in, and well as we will, the weather slowed me down, so that's not my fault. And then ordering asphalt was delayed because of the high price of oil. I mean, is that their fault? But it does, you know, delay the project or muck up the project. And you sit back and go, yeah, that didn't go as smooth as we wanted it to. But I don't know that we could actually say they weren't the responsible bidder at the end, because they got the project done. Were there hiccups? Yeah. So you really kind of, you have to look at every situation. And it very rarely, as was noted, very rarely ever comes up unless you've got just irrefutable evidence, you know, that they didn't know what they were doing. I mean, I've had contractors do a project, and 20 years later, we do like at a wastewater plant, we do a remodel, and that contractor didn't have a footing underneath a wall. I mean, that's primary stuff, you know. But were they generally a responsible bidder? Yeah. That one contractor may not have been very good that they used, but the bidder was fine. So we don't have a blacklist. That would be inappropriate to sit and say these are all the companies we've had trouble with, because even the best companies have issues sometimes with a project, and it may not be their fault. And so we just take every bid and look at it, and if they're used to doing this work in the past, then, you know, they're more than likely a responsible bidder, unless we have, like I said, irrefutable evidence that they bamboozled us last time. And that rarely happens. You know, you just don't see it that often, because they want to continue their reputation to get more work. So they usually try and make it work.
Okay, good to know. So for the most part, we're usually going with the low bidder.
Correct.
All right. Further questions, comments from the committee, or how do you wish to act on this contract?
I can make the motion. You want to read it?
Yeah, we're looking to make a motion recommending the City Council adopt a resolution entering into an agreement with CAMCO for Project 2108 seal coating in the amount of $70,000 even.
And I will second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second as read. Further questions, comments, or concerns before we vote? We shall vote. Councilwoman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilor Fagerly.
Aye.
Councilwoman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilor Plowman votes aye. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes. All right, we are out of the action items. On to discussion items. We already had public safety, so let's get on with it with the Civic Center roof discussion, which I know y'all are just chomping at the bit to discuss. I assume we're going to Mr. Baumgarten for this one. Thank you for being here. Mr. Baumgarten, let's talk Civic Center roof when you are ready.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone, chair, member of the committee. During the process of LSE, looking over the structural plans and design of the event slash rec center, they came up with a concern that they have of part of the Civic Center building. It's on page 3 of your packet that I sent to you. It's the 1981 edition that was added on to the Civic Center. And if you walk in, and so you understand where we're located at, it's where the restroom facility is at before you go into the, when you go into the Cardinal Arena, and where the Park and Rec offices are at. And also on the back side of the bathroom, it's where the there's a utility room and where their officials room is for the hockey games. So that area it was in the 1981 edition. What's LSE is telling us from their consultant, Paulson and Clark, is due to the fact that the Cardinal Arena wall is 20 feet tall and the 1981 edition is a lot shorter than that, that we have a problem with a snow load with drifting. And so when they dug into the structural, they're saying that the joists are too light for this type of a roof application. So they wanted to bring it to our attention that it wasn't correctly done in 1981. The code should have allowed a proper snow load joist for that, and it was not included in this project. So they're just concerned about if the event center goes forward with the addition to the lobby, and if the alternate number one goes where it's the community room, that there's going to have to be additional work to that roof to make it up to standards and up to code. Basically what they told me is that they would propose to remove everything off the roof. So there's a rooftop unit on there now. They would actually build it from the inside out to reinforce the joists and then put everything back on onto the roof. So I wanted to bring this to your attention, because we don't know what the bids are going to be with the event center. They'll be coming in the next week or so, but also this is also lasts us about 40 years already. So as being out here, we don't really see any issues that has caused us problems with this snow load. We do have a little bit with the front doors. If we get really heavy snow, we could tell that our front doors go down a little bit. They get a little bit harder to open, but then staff just goes up on top of the roof and snow blows the roof off to help alleviate the pressure that we have. So the proposal from LSE's is $12,500 to develop the project scope and to get the drawings and everything to reinforce those joist beams that are on the roof right now. So we kind of want, talking to the city of Mayor Grommets, we're looking at like, let's see what happens with the event center and then make a decision from there.
So just for clarity, Rob, the 12,000 some odd dollars that you mentioned, that would be to actually design, that would be the cost to design the fix for this?
Correct.
Okay, and then I suppose you don't get actual construction estimates until that design is actually put together.
Correct.
All right. Councilwoman Osmus, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
If we decided to not go ahead with the event center, does it still need to be done?
Talking to LSE and Paulson and Clark, they saying it would need to, they would recommend the project to be done either way. If the city decided not to do the project and the addition would go on, they would want to have some sort of a release or waiver knowing that this was brought to our attention and it wasn't addressed.
Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, members of the committee, I would emphasize that what you're getting is a document that you're gonna sign as a community saying, yeah, we heard you, we understand the roof is not made as strong as it is, and we understand it's a life safety issue, and we're gonna take our chances in the future. And we're not going to sue you because you already brought it to our attention. We're going to take all the liability on ourselves. Okay. Has it withstood? I think the answer is, you know, yes, it has. It's my understanding that there's some leaks that are through, and as noted by Mr. Baumgarten, you know, the roof is flexing as we know it today. And if you were to add, you know, the new section onto it, now you've really made it actually even a better place for snow to collect with nowhere to blow it, kind of a thing. You box it in. And so it makes it worse, in other words, and they're basically alerting us to that, which, by the way, I want to point out, that was one of the selling points, you know, of the architects in the very beginning was, they will look at your existing facility and bring those things that may need attention, you know, up for you to address. This is probably the only thing that's been brought up. You know, they looked at the number of parking spots. You know, they looked at the bathrooms. Are they meeting code? They've looked at a lot of existing structure. And to be honest, this is the only thing they've really found that is, you know, substandard roof, you know, trusses. And so, you know, they did their job, they brought it to our attention, and now we need to decide whether or not this is a good time to do it when there's construction going on, as, you know, as an add-in, or do we want to say, let's say we do add on the new section, do we want to tear into that roof, you know, 18 months from now, and replace that roof then, you know. So the question is, do we do it at all? Do we do it when there's construction, or do we do it, you know, a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, when we decide that's the time to do it? So those are your three options.
Okay. Well, it is, it's not an action item, but it's brought to our attention. And I understand the engineers wanting their hold harmless, because once they find something and see it, then yeah, they give you an option to either design a fix or they do not want to be held liable. They pointed it out, so that this is them doing their due diligence. Councilmember Nelson.
My only comment was that it sounds like something we should be proactive on no matter what we do. But I mean, it sounds like there are water issues and maybe even safety issues with the roof and then putting people up there too. So I think we take it for information, but it feels like something that we need to be proactive on.
So are we okay taking it for information right now? And then I assume we're kind of at a point where we kind of want to sit and wait for the event center discussion, find out where we're at there, and then decide what we're going to do regarding this. Regardless of which way we go on that. Councillor Osmus.
Do we have some place where we'd come up with $12,000 to fix it? Is that in the budget?
No, it is not in the budget. I would be putting this into a capital improvement plan for the future anyway, since I know about it now.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
Again, you know, if it were to fall down, we wouldn't even ask where, if we have money in the budget, you know, kind of a thing, because we'd have to fix it, you know, and on an annual basis, you know, Finance Director Oakens will tell you, you know, we have leftover after our budget, after our $43 million budget is all expended at the end of the year, we usually have like $500,000 or some years, maybe $1 million, given the situation we find ourselves in. But that's the amount that kind of gets carried over, you know. So I don't think that there's a problem on the money side. I think we should do the study so we know what we need to do in the future. And then if you want to do that now or a year from now or 2 years from now, that's a decision, you know, later. But I think we need to know, are we talking about a $40,000 roof job, or are we talking about a $400,000 roof job? And I think that estimate is what's needed so that the city council can plan, where is that money coming from? You know, if it was $400,000, that's a way different situation than $40,000. So I just throw that out there. We should probably, you know, get the first phase done so we know what we're talking about.
Rob, go ahead.
I kind of asked them that question to kind of, I want to say, put them on the spot. I know that they couldn't give me a dollar amount, but I'm like, are we like a $20,000, $25,000 fix, or are we closer to a $100,000 fix? And they're saying, you're going to be closer to the $100,000 fix, to give us an idea of what we're talking about. They couldn't.
I could have told you that one.
I'm not going to, but it's going to be a fix.
Yeah, so the question is, Brian, do we as a council, is it smart for us as a council, do we advise that we sign off on it with LSE right now? I mean, or do we wait until we decide to take action? Is this something we pause on until we're talking event center again when numbers come back, or what do you recommend?
I guess, you know, Rob hit on it earlier. If we go ahead with that addition onto the building, it's an alternate. If we do the alternate, to me, then you want to do the roof, because you've boxed that section of the building in. You surrounded it. Okay. If you don't do the alternate, then doing that roof is so much easier, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, because you have access to it, you know. So that's what Rob was hinting at, is when we get the bids in on the event center, if the bids come in so high that we can't do the alternate, then I think, you know, you could live with doing the redoing the roof, you know, 2 years from now, or, you know, whenever you want to, you can take that risk because it hasn't fallen down yet. Okay. But if you're going to box it in now, in order to get to that roof, you got to walk over all your other roofs, you know, to get to it. And that just, you know, puts kind of wear and tear on all the roofs that you have in the area. It's just easier to do. So I think, we wait until we find out if that alternate is accepted or not. And if it is, then I think I would move forward on the roof replacement. If it's not, I think you have some breathing room to make a decision when you do it. Isn't that, I guess, what we were talking about, Rob?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. Just, we kind of want to see what the event center project happens. And then if not, I think we can be able to afford to be able to look at the capital improvement project plans, putting it in there.
Okay, sounds good. So I think it's probably good for us to know. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, but I think for right now we sit on it. And then we will, it'll inevitably come around the bend. I'm sure it will. In the interest of time, let's go ahead and try slam this last one out. Unless Rick, did you have something you wanted to say?
I'm just wondering, should we talk with the building officials, the inspection department, and see if they would make us replace it, knowing now that there's a problem? I'd just have a discussion with them if they would make us do it and we get our permit. So
I'll contact Tom and Jason to have them come out and take a peek at it.
Okay, thank you.
The more information we have, the better. So it's good if we can get it from multiple sources. I agree. Good job, Rick. All right. Let's try to talk about the flags of honor quick before we have to adjourn and move on to finance. Mr. Christensen.
Actually, I think Rob is going to take this one if I'm remembering correctly, because he's got more recent information.
Yep, I'll
got
take it.
Go for it, Rob.
Well, the Flags of Honor, they're gearing up to get this project up and running and started. They've got a lot of donations coming in. So Steve Gardner, who's the project manager, contacted me and brought Gary and Kurt in from Public Works to start talking about the project and just making sure that we're crossing our T's and our dotting our I's. I've had to go through the Park and Rec Board, so they're aware of it as well. But I've also talked to the city attorney to make sure that any agreements that need to be in place are in place before the project starts. So more disinformation saying that the project is going to go forward. Their plan is to have it ready by Veterans Day of this year. So staff is working with the group, making sure that the agreements and everything are in place for them to get the project going.
What do they need in terms of formal approval?
There's going to have to be an agreement in place for them to basically have the donation and with insurance and liability and everything like that. So Robert Scott's on it and working with Steve Gardner and myself for the agreement.
When do you anticipate we'll see action item yet this month, maybe, or probably into May?
I would say probably the first part of May.
Okay. Questions or comments regarding that? Otherwise, we'll wait for the paperwork to come across. And for our next committee meeting or next couple committee meetings that should come in. I got 20 to 6. Does anybody have anything else pressing for Public Works before we adjourn? Going once, going twice. I see no hands. Okay, well, it looks like Councillor Nelson.
No, I'm simply going to make sure that everybody... Mr. Oaken sent out an email. It looks like he changed the time on the GoToMeeting. So I just want to make sure everybody finds the right one to head over that direction. So that's all.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, looks like we made it through our agenda here. So good job, everybody, for staying on point. We got through everything we need to get through. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. And I hope everybody has a good evening.
Motion to adjourn.
We'll look for a motion to adjourn. We are adjourned. Thank you.